TED Audio Collective.
You're listening to TED Talks Daily. I'm your host, Elise Hu. Philanthropy dollars could go so many places. There's just so much need. But as philanthropic advisor Rebecca Darwin points out, funding decisions have historically come from the same power sources, and the ripple effects of that show up in certain communities that are consistently left behind. In her 2023 talk from TED at Destination Canada, she lays out a vision to do philanthropy differently and more equitably. After the break. Support for TED Talks Daily comes from Odoo. To put it simply, Odoo is built to save. Odoo saves time, Odoo saves money, but most importantly, Odoo saves businesses. That's right. Odoo's superhero software rescues companies from the perils of disconnected platforms, and Odoo's utility belt of user-friendly applications puts the power of total business management in the palm of your hand. Learn more at odoo.com/TED Talks. That's odoo.com/TED Talks. Odoo, saving the world one business at a time. This show is brought to you by Schwab. With Schwab investing themes, it's easy to invest in ideas you believe in, like electric vehicles, renewable energy, water sustainability, and more. Choose from over 40 themes. Buy as is or customize the stocks in a theme to fit your goals. Learn more at schwab.com/thematic investing. Support for TED Talks Daily is from Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You can say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Like TED Talks? You should check out the TED Radio Hour with NPR. Stay tuned after this talk to hear a sneak peek of this week's episode.
I spent my whole career in the nonprofit sector. Street outreach, program management, fundraising, grant making, public policy, you name it, I've done it. I've seen a lot. And I'm a really positive person, so it's actually difficult to say this, but the way we do philanthropy right now, the way we've done it for decades, is broken. And here's how I found out. In my early 20s, I was a frontline social worker in New York City, working with people living with HIV. Many of them had multiple chronic illnesses and they were underhoused. So I'd spend my days and even some nights with them running around the city to doctor's appointments and housing agencies. The day-to-day work was hard. But the hardest part was we never had enough funding to do the work. On Friday mornings, I'd go into the office to write up my case notes for the week, and I'd speed past front reception, not looking at the mailboxes full of blue slips. Each blue letter marked another colleague let go because of our funding crisis. Within 1 month, I'd lost half my team, and my caseload ballooned from 30 to over 100. And this is the reality for so many nonprofits. They're at the mercy of their funders. And when we look at those funders, they decide who and what gets funded. And it's almost always a mystery how they make those decisions. Nonprofits spend so much time fundraising, filling out pages and pages and pages of paperwork. And they're filling out so much paperwork that they hardly have any time to actually support communities, which is literally the thing that they're funded to do. After years of doing amazing work improving every single metric, we'd hear things like, "I'm sorry, our major donor has switched direction. They're no longer working and investing in HIV and AIDS." Or, "I'm sorry, we issue grants for 3 years max." This would never happen in the private sector. You do an amazing job for 3 years and then get fired? It makes no sense. So I decided to switch sides. Instead of being on the side that's asking for money, what if I went to the side that was giving money, helped them understand what was happening on the ground, and make a change? So off I went into the world of philanthropy, only to discover that trillions of dollars are in donor-advised funds and private foundations, just waiting to be donated. Meanwhile, those nonprofits and community-led organizations are wasting so much time filling out paperwork and competing over scraps. I'd hear a donor publicly support a cause like homelessness, and then behind closed doors, I'd hear, they don't really know what's good for them. What they really need is, which is code for donor knows best. I was confused. How could a donor possibly know what was really needed? Their lifestyle looked nothing like the people they wanted to help. The problem wasn't a lack of money. Again, trillions of dollars are sitting just waiting to be put to work. But even if we unlocked every single one of those dollars, it actually wouldn't matter because a very small group of people are making all of the decisions about funding. Their priorities, their way. Almost 70% of donations are directed by the top 1% of donors. And they choose causes that resonate with their lives, like their university or the arts. And these issues are overfunded. And look, I know that donors have good intentions. I really do. But good intentions are not good enough. Communities are being left behind, and we are running out of time. I wanted to shift the power dynamic from a top-down approach to a community-led model where nonprofits and donors really work together. So in 2020, I co-founded the Foundation for Black Communities with Liban Abacord, Jacob Leamar, and Joseph Smith to do exactly that. We were inspired by a radically different type of philanthropy, Black philanthropy. It's the formal and informal giving that happens in Black communities around the world. In some cases, it's the kind of giving that you don't get a tax receipt for. And I learned this most in my family. We do almost everything together, including Box Hand. Box Hand is an informal savings group, and in my family, we have 13 members. So twice a month, we all throw a hand, meaning we put $100 into the pot, and one person gets the entire thing, $1,300. The person who gets the full amount rotates, and you'll get the full thing two times a year. It's helped my family buy a new fridge, pay school tuition, and you know what? We've even put a down payment on a house using this. And sometimes we negotiate. Oh, you need your hand ahead of me? No problem. I'll wait. Of the 13 people, some really need it. It's their only means of savings. And others would be fine without it. But here, we're all equal. There is no top or bottom. It's not about charity or pity or sympathy. The goal of Box Hand is that everybody levels up. And it's easier to level up together because we're accountable to the collective. This practice has existed across the African diaspora since the 1700s. In Guyana, we call it Box Hand. In Nigeria, it's Susu. In Mali and Senegal, it's Tontine. In Haiti, it's called Sol. And in Jamaica, it's Partner. And the cool thing is this exists outside of the African diaspora too. It looks slightly different from place to place. The Haida Nation has potlatches. In Mexico, there's tandas, and in Cambodia, there's tongtin. And communities turn to each other and use this kind of collective approach when we face exclusion and systemic racism in the financial industry. For example, Black people are rejected business loans and mortgages at twice the rate of the general population. And so when we face that exclusion, we turn to our communities and are creative in our solution making. And you know, this has been passed down from generation to generation. My mother taught me this. She gives generously to our communities because they gave generously to her. Now and forever, the collective giving never stops. Black philanthropy is rooted in a concept called Ubuntu. It's an African philosophy widely understood as humanity towards others. And we have a saying, I am because you are, or I am because we are. And that means what affects you affects me. We're all interconnected and have a shared responsibility to one another. Ubuntu would be the guiding principle for the Foundation for Black Communities. And in order to do that, we need to make two practical shifts. Who is making funding decisions and how those decisions are made? So the who is obvious. We're looking at Black community members, but we're looking for true on-the-ground experts. And this is an important distinction. Some people will say to me, Rebecca, you're Black. Tell us what's best for Black communities, which is actually ridiculous. How could I possibly speak on behalf of all Black people? You can't. It's not possible. So to have real insight, we look for local experts and let them make the decisions because they know their communities, their partners, and field the best. And this is what we did in our recent $500,000 youth wellness granting program. We received 99 eligible applications from Black groups working in everything from diabetes awareness to inner city farming and after school programming. And just like Boxhand, we turned to the collective and extended an invitation to be part of our grant review panel. Now, the invitation was intentionally put to anybody connected to the project. It might be a program manager, a participant, or a volunteer. And those volunteers became peer reviewers. The peer reviewers read each application, scored them, and offered candid feedback. And then we used their rankings to allocate funding. In other words, it was the collective that made the funding decision. Now, you might be thinking, what's the big deal about that? But after years in philanthropy, I can tell you that's not how it's typically done. It's usually the donor, maybe their relative or a CEO who has the final say. But here, we trusted community to do the work and to make those funding decisions. Luckily, we're not the first or only to pool funding and trust community to make decisions. We're part of a growing movement that's changing the power dynamics in philanthropy. And recently, because of our community-led approach and collective advocacy, the Canadian government awarded the Foundation for Black Communities a historic $200 million. This is amazing, and I'm hopeful that private foundations and donors will follow this powerful example. You know, there are hundreds of community-led collaboratives working in the most pressing issues of our times. For example, there's Right Relations Collaborative, and Indigenous peoples are making the decisions there. At the Equality Fund, feminists are making the decisions. And at Klima Fund, climate activists are making the decisions. When I think back on my time in the front lines, I wonder, if different people were making the funding decisions, would those blue slips even have existed? Because the funding was always available. It just wasn't accessible to the communities who need it most. And this is finally changing with community-led collaborative funds. Even after all of my time in the sector, the highs and lows, I'm optimistic because the future of philanthropy is happening right now, where community-led collaboratives are the bridge between people who want to do good with their money and the people on the ground with the experience to do it. This is Ubuntu. We are all interconnected, and each of us has a role to play. I am. Because you are. I am. Because we are. Thank you.
Scientist Andrew Dent helps manufacturers rethink how they make stuff.
This one I thought might be interesting. Merdicotta. It's actually cups and bowls that are manufactured out of cow manure.
This is poop. This is cow poop.
This is cow poop, yes.
But it looks really nice.
On the hunt for a sustainable future and reimagining how we get there. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Subscribe or listen to the TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts. PRX.